Welcome in live to the Open Line Comment Program on Quicks and Quicks FM. We're pleased to be joined today by Brian Houseworth, news director from the Missouri Net. But before we say hi to Brian, I think we've got a call from Jefferson City. Good morning, sir. How are you?
Good morning, Bob. I'm doing great.
State Representative Tim Remley is with us as we begin our program. Brian, say hi to Tim.
Representative, how you doing? Good morning.
Good morning to you, too, Brian.
Yep, absolutely. I'll tell you, we were down there, you and I believe it was, well, the days are getting long right now, Tuesday, but what a long, lengthy debate, but a very, I thought, informative debate about the issue of the grain belt. And I think the biggest thing that I learned from you when you got up and testified is that, and I'd not heard this at all until you said it on the floor, is that grain belt was in your office and you could not get answers to virtually any of the questions you asked them.
That's right. I mean, they were to get back with me about the contract, about the low costs for our communities and stuff like that. And we had a good talk, good discussion, but they never did. Came back to my office, and they told me they would. And they even had their lobbyists with them down here, and they all told me that they would be getting back with me and giving me the information I asked for, and that never happened. I didn't even get a phone call.
All right, let me ask you. I know we heard after the rally on Tuesday in the initial House vote, it may come up for a final vote today. Is that still kind of the plan?
Yes. Yeah, that as far as I know, Bob, I think that'll be third read and be voted on today at some point. I haven't seen a bill string yet on the calendar yet, but I'm sure that it'll be up there.
What are your thoughts when that comes up for passage? Will it clear the House?
Yeah, I think it will clear the House, and then we'll see what it does in the Senate. But I think there's, with what we saw at the rally the other day, I think it's got a good chance to pass over there as well.
And, Brian, that's Representative Jim Hansen's bill, and I know you've been tracking that one too, haven't you?
Well, absolutely, because I was there for the rally, Bob and Representative. I was there for the rally, and, of course, I covered the debate. And I can tell you, Bob and Representative Remley, that I did speak to Representative Hansen about it and also checked again yesterday late afternoon with the Speaker Pro Tem, John Wieman, who's from O'Fallon, and he does say that this is on the calendar to be third read today. But as Representative Remley kind of just suggested, it's on there. That doesn't mean they'll get to it because you never know what's going to come up. But they, you know, it's expected to be third read. But as Representative Remley knows, sometimes on these Thursdays, we've had bills that we think are non-controversial that'll go an hour and a half. It really just, you know, just depends.
Yeah, that's for sure. And, you know, you just never know, you know, some simple bill that we call a simple bill can turn into a major deal.
Oh, absolutely. Exactly.
So, you know, never know.
All right, we only want to keep Representative Remley a few moments, and I appreciate you taking time because I know the last couple of weeks of session, it gets very hectic. How about a couple of your bills? I know one has to do with the private or religious schools and the minimum wage. Where is that right now in the process?
Well, we heard that on Tuesday morning, Bob, and in the Senate, and there was some opposition to it, but, you know, for the most part, I think it went very well, and, you know, I just think this is something that's very important. I've had some both Protestant and Catholics that have reached out to me, and they are really watching this bill. They're hoping that it passes, and I hope it does, too. I was just hoping that we could get that through this year because it's going to be an important issue to a lot of our schools.
All right. If Brian's hearing this for the first time, can you kind of go over that? Because there were exceptions made in the measure that passed for public schools, but private schools weren't included, were they?
No, they weren't. They were excluded, and you know, all the public schools, and you know, were mentioned where they wouldn't have to comply by the minimum wage law. So this has really become a pretty big issue to a lot of our private schools because it's going to raise their. They're already having meetings about raising their tuition. They're actually the vendors that sell products to their schools already raised their prices because of the minimum wage. And so some of them feel like it could even threaten them to be in existence. So, you know, this is an important bill for them, and I just think it's really crucial that, and, you know, that was brought up in the committee in the Senate that, you know, you're asking for a special carve-out, and I said, well, this is relating, I'm just doing the carve-out for the private schools because public schools was, you know, not in that, you know, they were exempted, so this kind of, and, you know, we have parents that of private schools, they're paying property taxes for the public schools, and then they're paying tuition for their kids who go into this to the private. So, you know, this is something I think that really needs to be done for parents as well.
Brian, I know that Representative Remley's got to get back to work in Jefferson City. I'll give you the final thought with him.
Yeah, absolutely. Representative, I appreciate you calling in. I appreciate your service, and you've always been great talking to our affiliate there in Moberly, one of our most active affiliates, and talking to me at the Capitol, so I appreciate that. I do have one question. I think it's important, and it's not about a particular bill, but it's about, you mentioned education. Is there anything you can share with us as far as Representative Raber, the chairwoman of education? Any word on whether she'll be back at the Capitol? Because, as you know, the charter school bill and any of her priorities are really on hold because she was in that terrible car accident.
Yes, she was, and we're still praying for her a lot, and I'm just hoping that she gets, you know, to where she can come back. But Brian, at this point, I really don't know if that'll be possible for her to get back during this session. And all I know that she's, you know, it's, we're just thankful that she's still able to be here. And you know, at the, you know, she had a really serious injuries, and we're hoping and praying for her that she will, but I don't think that'll happen this session, but, you know, we'll have to wait and see on that.
Absolutely. I understand that. I appreciate the information.
All right. Hey, Representative Rumley, thanks so much. We'll chat with you either later today or tomorrow for your weekly program. Continue good luck in the last couple weeks of the session.
All right. Well, thanks a lot, Bob.
All right. Thank you. Representative Tim Rumley, join us. Before we go any further, we got a call coming in. 800 line. Hi there. You're on the open line.
Good morning, gentlemen. How are you today?
Gentlemen, you must be talking about Brian.
How did you know?
What's on your mind?
The question, I understand that we've got another Senate bill coming in concerning the CAFO industry and local control. What can you tell me about that? And is there any chance that that thing could go through?
The bill you're referring to, I assume, because there's, you know, there's various bills out there, but the big one that is getting the attention, sir, is from the chairman of the Senate Agriculture Committee, Mike Bernscatter, who's from Jefferson City. And just in a nutshell, to summarize it in one sentence for you, his bill would essentially prevent the counties from doing the health ordinances about CAFOs. The way they the way they've written it, they being Senator Bernscatter and people that helped write that bill, they say that they don't want any of the regulations to go any further than DNR. That bill would probably have a chance of going through the House, again, very late in the session right now. Any bill like that, though, is very difficult to get through the Senate. And you know, all it takes is one senator to, you know, stand up and talk about it. So I think it'd be very tough to get that through the Senate, but I've been wrong before. But my sense is, you know, especially at this late in the session, I think that's going to be difficult to do. Now, there was a rally. You just heard Representative Remley call in. There were farm groups that were rallying at the Capitol Tuesday. I mean, virtually all the commodity groups were there. And they were all there for Grain Belt, you know, to support the Hansen bill. But there were a few there, too, that were rallying in support of the Bernscatter bill. But very little attention was focused on that. Primarily, it was certainly the media attention was about the Hansen bill.
Okay. Well, I think from my point of view that the CAFO industry is not something I want close to my house. And it seems like they've been pushing this thing for years and years. I got involved in it some years ago, as a matter of fact.
And, what county?
I'm down around Atlanta in Macon County.
Okay.
And
it's generally, sir, it's the commodity groups like the pork producers, the cattle.
Right.
It's these large and, you know, the larger well-known, agricultural groups that support that bill. Now, their argument is that if you put a regulation on a capo, it will trickle down to the small independent producer. It sounds like you disagree with that.
Well, we've had local control here for a long, long time, and it was hard fought to get it, and it's working fine. I don't hear any complaints right now about it, haven't for years. But if the thing's just left to go, the odors from those things, if you get, huge ones, it's pretty bad. All you have to do is go north of a Bevier, and there's a CAFO over there, and it's not even a real big one, and it's it's stunning.
All right. Hey, thanks for the phone call this morning.
Okay. Well, I won't worry for right now then. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Wait, Brian, this is good. And I know I've shared this with you before. What you mentioned about the Senate is 100% accurate. I just take you back to the last day of session when Joe Maxwell was a state senator. He had a priority bill he wanted to get through. Someone did exactly what you talked about. And he said, Mr. President, once again, the mighty majority of one has won. I withdraw my bill.
Well, and see, that you got such a good memory. That's exactly right. But that bill I'm referring to with Bernskatter, again, this late in the session, it's very hard to get anything through. I'm not saying that bill can't get through that I just referred to, but it's going to be tough because there's opposition to it, and it's from the lawmakers who A, are environmentalists, but also that support the idea of the cities and counties to be able to do that. But your point is so well taken in that. Just in the last couple weeks, Bob, you've seen it, especially in the Senate.
Oh, filibuster after filibuster.
Well, yeah, Title IX came up. That was filibustered in the wee hours. And then we've had the bridge bonding bill that ran into some stuff. And then Senator Nasheed has already made it clear if the abortion bill comes up, she's going to filibuster that. They've had the Kansas City Star, because I cover primarily the House, although I do go over to the Senate when I can. The Star reported that even after the agreement, I believe on Monday night or Monday evening on the bridge bonding bill, they thought everything was fine. And then Senator Searpoy gave up and got up on the floor and gave a blistering criticism of the Senate Conservative Caucus. And these are all Republicans, by the way, and he's a Republican. So, again, it just goes to show you, you never know what's going to happen in the Senate. And I'd also remind people that most of the filibusters we see are Republicans filibustering Republican bills. And just on the other side, I've seen Democrats filibuster Democratic bills.
Okay, and you brought up something that when it first came up early in the session, I didn't think, honestly, it was that big a deal. That's a conservative caucus.
Mm-hmm.
But you've got a handful of senators there who can really make some noise and maybe not pass legislation, but they can certainly derail legislation.
That's exactly right. They become players. There's six, maybe seven members of that caucus, if you will. It's called the Senate Conservative Caucus. And the two players from your area are Senator Denny Hoskins of Warrensburg, who has a big chunk of the Big K country, and then, of course, Senator Cindy O'Loughlin is part of that group as well. So they are players. Now, the Senate is controlled, Bob, by Republicans 24-10. So again, the public probably thought at the beginning, and I always remind people that don't ever pay attention to those numbers because, Republicans have been in the majority here for a number of years, and they get a handful of things they want, but a lot of it they don't get because of infighting and, various things. Democrats, when they were in control, the same thing. So those six votes have a huge impact. But I'll tell you what also has become more powerful, Bob, without question, are the 10 Democrats. You would think being outnumbered 24-10 that they have zero power. I would argue that they have more power maybe than they've had in the last decade, especially with the emergence of this conservative caucus. And then Searpoy, who got up to speak Monday night, basically said, I'm paraphrasing, essentially what he said is he is done negotiating with them. And Hoskins was furious with that, according to the Kansas City Star article. Again, I was in the House, but the report that I read said that Hoskins felt like that Searpoy attacked them personally on the Senate floor. So So we'll wait and see what happens. Apparently, they all went to a barbecue after after that. And Senator Steerpoy's quote was, quote, "I think I ruined the barbecue," end of quote.
All right. If you got an opinion on a topic, give us a phone call. This may be one. And this was on Senator Laughlin's social media page yesterday afternoon. She says the Republican majority just voted not to impose work requirements for SNAP. She indicated 13 members voted yes, 21 members voted no. The issue at hand was a bill to increase fees on managed care, which would allow the state to draw down more Medicaid funding. An amendment was added, which was basically the work requirement for SNAP benefits. Some members felt the two should be voted on separately. Of course, the increased Medicaid would pass, and the work requirements wouldn't, which everyone knew. It was her feeling that everyone should live within their budget and or face runaway costs. So, I mean, there's an example of Republicans not going along with what you would typically think is a Republican issue.
Well, and it's a Republican bill. Again, part of that, though, in fairness to both sides, part of it is there was concern about breaking that up into two issues. But Senator Sater's been talking about that bill for a number of years. Senator Hoskins, you could pull him up on Twitter. He tweeted last night that he was one of the 13 Republicans that voted for that. Something about 80 hours a week, and you know, able-bodied people being able to work. I don't recall exactly what was in the tweet, but it was something to that extent. But that I didn't think that bill was going to go through, and the Democrats were completely opposed to it. And then they had a couple of Republicans cross over. And then the other thing is it was combined into a second bill. But the conservative caucus certainly has power. Now, the question that will come up, as you know, I covered, and you've had on the newscast, I covered Senator Blunt addressing the Missouri House yesterday. He called, Bob, I think this is huge. He called for the legislature to pass a prescription drug program. And as you know, you've reported on it, Missouri is the only state that doesn't have one. It's been blocked for years by Senator Rob Schaff of St. Joseph. He's gone now, and yet it's still bottled up. And there are some lawmakers on the Republican side that are concerned about it. Senator Laughlin is one of them about this database. But I thought the fact that not only did he call for a prescription drug monitoring program, but he actually went further and called for a multi-state registry. I thought that was huge. The House has already passed PDMP.
Overwhelmingly.
103 to 53, exactly. So a lot of Republican votes. Of virtually all the Democrats, well, but the bill is in the Senate. Senator Lutkemeyer has that bill. It is on the informal calendar, and as you know, I mean, here we are again talking about the dates here. It is April the 18th. We are less than a month away, so ain't getting virtually anything through when you're only there Monday through Thursday. You know, and then you've got all these other issues that are in sports wagering. We haven't even touched on that. Budget. I mean, there's the bottom line. It'll be tough to get that through with the timing, but Lutkemeyer at some point will get a chance to get it on the floor. I just don't know when.
All right. If you have an opinion on a subject, give us a call. You want to talk about the sports wagering bill. That's Senator Hoskins' bill. Video lottery terminals are also involved in that. He was very optimistic early on in the session that was going to go through, but like you said, we're down to about 4.5 weeks left.
That's the hardest part, and I actually, and he's got the main Senate bill. There are other bills. Lincoln Huff has one, but I think you're spot on there, Bob, about the fact that Hoskins has the main bill, and you'd be able to do some gaming and stuff like that in, for instance, truck stops. You'd be able to do it there, other places as well. The bill, the main one to look at in the House is Cody Smith's bill, who's the House Budget Committee Chairman.
And that's a huge position to have a bill come forward.
Well, it is, because he controls essentially not a dime gets spent in the state without his approval. So he has a lot of clout. But he was very frank with me Monday when I saw him. He said that, you know, the timing is the biggest thing. He wasn't sure if it would go anywhere. And his big priority right now, they got to get the budget through. They only, you know, it's passed the House. It's still in the Senate right now. As you know, there was a UMKC had that incident with the speaker over the weekend. Tons of controversy about that. The UMKC chancellor's down there. There were some lawmakers wanting to cut their funding. So that's, you know, who knows what's going to happen with that. But the Senate is still working on the budget. there's always going to be negotiations at some point. Once the Senate passes their budget, then they go to the conference committee, and those take a while. So the bottom line, Cody Smith's going to have his hands full with that. But again, we'll see what happens if he can get his wagering bill through. It's something he wants, but again, at this point, we are, like you said, 4 weeks to go. Bob, we've had one bill that has been signed into law and passed this session. That was the Correa Brown Highway Bill. I think it highlights the fact that it is very difficult to pass virtually any bill today.
All right. Correct me if I'm wrong. May 10th, of course, is the deadline to get the budget done. And we're sitting here right now at, like you said, April 18th. And the Senate still has the budget in committee. Granted, not a whole lot of debate will happen on the Senate floor unless someone wants to try and filibuster the budget. And then it's got to get to conference, get back through the House and through the Senate. I think we're even late in the session at this point for the budget.
Yeah, and you know, we've had, I think it was last year, the year before, Greitens, just because of Governor Greitens at the time, and I would have been 2 years ago, not because of his controversy, it would have been 2 years ago because the swearing in was late that year, as I recall. It was and then he had to get his team assembled, so the budget was late. So we've seen it, but you're right. Traditionally, it is, you know, because there have been years where we've had a budget passed by now. But, you know, I'm not too worried. I think they'll get it done, but they have to work through the process. And then the negotiations happen once they get to the conference committee. Summer jobs will be a huge issue. I think one of the biggest issues will be the state employees. Of course, in Moberly, you've got the Moberly Correctional Center, but there is a 3% right now that's in the House budget, $29.2 billion operating budget. State employees would receive a 3% across-the-board pay raise. In corrections officers, there's an $8 million pay retention plan, and it has to do with how many years, up to 20 years of service. I believe it's 1% every 2 years of continuous service. I've reported on that. So they think that would really help because the issue of corrections officers is they continue to have difficulty filling a lot of those positions. So the House tried to work with that. It's a priority of the governor. But, you know, again, that's something for Moberly and Vandalia and Bowling Green in your listening area. It's a huge issue.
And that's something Representative Remley and Representative Hansen told us going into the session. They thought that was basically a done deal. So we'll have to see what happens, what the Senate's going to do with it.
I think I don't, you know, see any opposition to it. But again, they'll have to pass it, obviously. It passed. It had no problem getting through the House. Lots of bipartisan support. And the other thing the governor proposed, and it looks like it's going to happen, is closing the Crossroads Correctional Center, so which is in Cameron, and consolidating it with Western Missouri up there in Cameron. So those are things that we're watching. But, Bob, there's so many other bills that we still have to wait and see what happens. I told you, I think the last time I was on with you, we've still got that, you know, bill that Cindy O'Loughlin has about essentially the Sedalia nursing home, that there's a daycare center that wants to open up right next to it with 17 sex offenders. That bill appears to be moving through, but it has not passed as of yet.
All right, we've got about 2.5 minutes or so left in the program. Let's do the public service announcement, Brian. You spent a lot of time going from the Learfield or MissouriNet offices to the Capitol. If someone from Big K Country wants to go down and visit the Capitol, beautiful building, but that construction process is still underway, where can they park?
Boy, I tell you, it's a great question, and I don't have a really good answer. That's a whole other issue, and the next time you have me on, we'll spend more time on it, because I've talked about this for well over a decade, because they talk about infrastructure projects.
Oh, parking's horrible around the Capitol.
It has been, and it's been a serious issue. We have people that are handicapped and, you know, in wheelchairs, and it's very difficult for them to go around. You're probably going to, a lot of them have to park in the garage on the other side of Madison. But then it's confusing, especially for elderly people who don't know the way to get around there, to find the way to get around the construction. This project is just massive at the Capitol, and they've still got a ton of work to do. It's going to take all the rest of this calendar year, all of 2020, if everything goes as planned. They hope to get it done by the inauguration in 2021. And keep in mind, this started last year. Now, the guys and women on that project are doing a great job. But parking is at a premium. But just to remind people, if they're going, make sure if you park on the street, you put money in the meters, because that's what I see. And I hear about it, but I see it. Jefferson City Police have a parking division, and if people aren't putting money in the meters, they do get ticketed. I see that all the time.
All right, we got a minute left, and even that project aside, parking around the Capitol is not good anyway.
That's absolutely. It's very difficult. I run into it because sometimes people will park in our Missouri Net parking spot, and I'll be over there, and it'll take me, you know, if I'm going to a press conference, I don't have time to walk over to the garage, and even there it's filled up. So it's problematic. It happens to the reporters as well. It's very frustrating.
All right. Hey, Brian, great stuff. Again, appreciate you and Representative Remley being with us, and we'll chat at you soon. Thank you.
Good. Thanks, Bob.
All right. That's Brian Houseworth from the Missouri Net. He's joined us on the Open Line Comment Program. Appreciate your phone calls as well.